Blog Talk Radio.
Dog. Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from downtown Anchorage. We have on the line Alex Stein, calling in from California. This is day one of our Iditarod coverage. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm very sad that I'm not up there with you all, but I was able to watch a lot of it over the web, and I'm very, very excited for this year's race.
You know, it was a very nice start there in downtown Anchorage. Michelle and I and the kids were there at the starting line. It was nice to be a fan for once instead of behind the scenes being the handler and the musher all the time. Don't get to see much then, but it was good to see all the mushers go out, starting with Martin Boozer, who left just a few minutes after 10, followed by 66 mushers, ending with Bruce Linton, who left about 12 o'clock or so, 12:15. He was the last musher out, number 67. And we forgot to mention, starting out, the honorary musher, what is her name, Jan Newton, Alex?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Yes. She went out, followed, the musher was the junior Iditarod winner who takes those guys out. His name is Noah. I can't recall the last name. Perea, I believe, is his last name. He takes the honorary musher out first before anybody else. So it's good to see everybody who went out today, and I'm looking forward to the show this evening. What is on tap?
Well, you know, it was a very, very exciting start to the race. Even though it doesn't count anymore in terms of time, it's always good to be able to have all of the mushers and all of the dogs there, and the Iditariders get to ride in the sled for the first 11 miles. And it's just it's a very, very exciting event filled with a lot of energy and, you know, people wandering around and costumed characters. And it's a very wonderful and very Alaskan kind of event.
It was. And, you know, it was totally packed down here today, Alex. I would probably guess 10, 20,000 spectators, like you said, in all sorts of regalia, lots of fancy fur hats, bear head hats and wolf hats and full furs and the whole nine yards. It was very warm down here in Anchorage. They mentioned over the PA system that it was 28 degrees, which is relatively warm for mushing, but they're only going a few miles, so there was lots of fanfare and pandemonium going on. It was a great time.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that as crowded as it is right near the start, if you go even as little as 8 or 10 blocks away, it's relatively clear. And what happens for the ceremonial start is it starts on 4th Street, and it goes about, I believe, about 10 blocks, and then it takes a hard right on Cordova and goes down a relatively steep hill, and then goes into the trail system, into the park. And it is not unheard of for mushers to get up a little bit too much speed or let their teams get up a little bit too much speed and actually fall over or crash when they're making that first turn. I think at this point enough people have done that it's drummed into everyone's heads that they need to be going very, very slow when they get to that turn. But that's always an interesting thing.
It is. And, you know, I've been had the pleasure of riding on that tag sled, the second sled behind the team for my good friend Hugh Neff. And one of the main reasons for that tag sled or drag sled is to be able to slow that team down on those hills and also to make sure that second sled is making the turns with the team. it's one of the first things that can that is told to us that just make sure you make those turns so we don't dump the sled. You know what is interesting, as you said, Alex, is as the teams progress through town into the woods and eventually to the Campbell Airstrip, there are fans lined up all the way on the race course. They're handing out sodas and hot dogs and cinnamon rolls and beers and everything. It's just a big party. And one of the things that everybody asks for is for dog booties. That's the big souvenir that everybody asks for as you're mushing down the trail. And I noticed several mushers, including Karin Hendrickson, who left about middle of the pack today. She had an entire garbage bag full of used booties that she's going to give out as souvenirs. The kids love them. Everybody loves those dog booties from all the teams.
And I can tell you from firsthand experience, it's much better to get the clean dog booty than to get a dog booty that a dog has worn and then falls off on the trail. I did that the first year I was up there, and I brought this dog booty back with me, and it was covered with snow and it was half frozen, and I put it in the sink when I got back to my hotel. And went out for a few hours, and when I came back, the entire place smelled of a very sweaty, in very good condition, husky.
That is true, but you know, Alex, if you look real closely on those booties, you can often see a paw print that has worked its way into the booty, and that's a pretty cool souvenir. If you have an Iditarod sled dog's paw print ingrained into the booty, if it's been used long enough, they will imprint that print on there. Pretty cool souvenir.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we were talking a little bit yesterday in the preview show about the field. We've got 66 teams this year, which is the same number as last year. There are only 15 women this year. There were, I believe, 18 last year, and not as many rookies as we're used to having. There are 11 official rookies, although the Iditarod considers you a rookie until you've finished the race. So Josh Kadzow, who scratched last year, is officially a rookie, even though he entered the race and ran a good deal of it last year. So we only have 11 rookies this year. We had 15 last year.
You know, that's exactly right. And some of those rookies, I'm thinking of one name in particular, Mike Ellis, who is a long time musher since this is a team of Siberians. He is a rookie in the Iditarod, but he has done several Yukon quests and, of course, many, many miles as a musher on qualifying runs and that sort of thing.
Right. So this is a very, very well-prepared field. It looks like it's going to be an extremely competitive race. Most of the top 10 finishers from last year are back, and they all are itching to come in first. There are six former champions who are in the field this year: Dallas Seavey, who won last year; John Baker, who won 2 years ago; Dallas's dad Mitch, who won in 2004, and then of course Martin Boozer, Lance Mackey, and Jeff King, all three of whom have won the race four times.
Right, and also in this year's race is John Baker. He won in 2011. He has the fastest time on record. I believe it's 8 days, 18 hours is the fastest on record, and he took the southern route, the route that they're running this year. And I think we misquoted yesterday, Alex, when we talked about the route. Did we say that they were running the northern route, or did we say the southern? Because it is the southern route through the ghost town of Iditarod and all of that there.
Yeah, I think we said they're running the northern route. Is that not correct?
Nope, they are running the southern route this year through Iditarod and Cripple and those checkpoints there.
Ah, okay. Well, then we got it wrong yesterday. So
no problem. That's what we're here for, to educate the fans. So as long as we do our job the best we can, I think we're doing all right. So I know yesterday, Alex, we were talking a little bit about the route and the trail conditions, and you had mentioned how different they are. And we talked just a second ago about John Baker having the fastest time on that southern route. Didn't you say something yesterday, was it last year, when we talked about Rick Swenson and running that northern route and doing very well with that?
I can't recall. I think it must have been last year.
From my understanding, and this may not be 100% correct, and folks that are listening today, I am in downtown Anchorage, and Wi-Fi was so bad in downtown Anchorage that I'm sitting here at the Barnes & Noble about 7 or 8 miles from downtown, and I don't have all of my notes, and I'm not 100% together being here in a cafe. We're going to do our best here. But anyway, the information that I understand is Rick Swenson, multiple Iditarod winner, won 3 Iditarods on that northern route. So his route of choice, of course, is that northern route, but they are running the southern route this year. Do you have any history with that at all, with any of the mushers in your research, Alex?
Yeah, you know, the northern route, I believe, different mushers have more success on one route or the other. And there's some conventional wisdom about which is the more difficult route, but ultimately I think it all comes down to a lot of intangibles, especially the weather. And I know since it's been so warm there in Anchorage, they're expecting that the first couple of days are going to be very, very warm compared to what we're used to seeing. So that is certainly going to have a huge effect on how the trail is, and especially going through the gorge and some of the early elevation gains and, the very, very difficult parts of the race that happen in the first couple of days.
You know, I think it's good to point out here, Alex, when we're talking about trail conditions, that as the mushers travel down the trail, of course, the best trail is the first pack of mushers. The trail is most groomed, it's most taken care of at that point. But as you progress through the field, the trail deteriorates relatively quickly. The back of the pack mushers typically have a pretty poor trail to deal with as they're mushing down. You have any information about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And this year especially, I think given that it's going to be relatively warm, on certain sections of the trail, the people in the back are going to be facing a lot of challenges. Some of the snowpack could be worn through. It's already a little bit warmer than certainly the dogs would like, and a little bit warmer than is ideal for the trail conditions. So we could be looking at a trail that would deteriorate even more rapidly than it usually does.
That's exactly right. Do you have any information on the weather at some of those checkpoints, at least today? And, of course, it's being a multi-day race, weather can change in a heartbeat. We can have a storm pop up in a matter of minutes, and the next thing you know, the race is totally changed because of that weather. Have you looked online at all at some of the early checkpoints, maybe past Squintna or Finger Lake, on what the weather's like?
Yeah, I look at the first couple, and it looks like it's going to be relatively warm, like in the 20s, which is, at least during the day, which is very warm for a lot of these dogs. Now, a lot of mushers prefer running at night, and a lot of the dogs will much prefer running at night because it's colder and they can there's less danger of them overheating, and they can operate much more efficiently. So I think we're going to see a very interesting run-rest pattern in the first couple of days as people try to shift more towards getting the bulk of their runs done when it's much cooler.
That's exactly right. And just a little bit of musher perspective there. Typically, you do want to run at night, or at least from evening on into the night, and be able to rest some of those longer rests during the day. That, just as Alex said, you don't want your dogs to overheat. And as we mentioned yesterday on the show, we talk about it being warm in the 20s. It is very warm for a sled dog team to be running at that temperature. When I ran in the Testamina 200 just this past month, it was only in the 30s, but there were several dog teams, mine included, that became very dehydrated very quickly because of the temperature change. So 30 degrees for a dog team is very warm, and you have to be very careful on how you take care of your dogs during that time and how you plan that run-rest schedule, as Alex mentioned.
Yeah, and what would you say would be the ideal temperature for most sled dogs to run?
I would say between 10 to minus 10 is optimum temperature. That's where you're going to see the trail conditions set up real nice, where you're not having too much of an ice pack trail, and it's not too much of a sugary snow condition at that point. And, of course, it's not too cold for the musher at minus 10. It's a very comfortable temperature in which to mush dogs. And, of course, above 10 is also very comfortable for both the musher and the dog. You're not having to worry about wearing big parkas and dog coats on your dogs and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yesterday we had talked about people getting the mushing bug and then going on to run the Iditarod. I just wanted to point out that there's a musher running, and I'm probably going to mispronounce his name, but it's Charlie Dania from Illinois.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had been Bruce Linton's Iditarider in 2007. Bruce Linton is a diabetic, and among other things was running the race in 2007 to demonstrate that people with long-term manageable diseases like diabetes could run the Iditarod, even though it's a very physically challenging race. And Dania also has diabetes, and he was so inspired by being Bruce Linton's Iditarider that he decided that he was going to train and move up to Alaska and run the Iditarod, and he's running his first race this year.
That's exactly right, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about Cindy Abbott in a episode as we get through the race here. That's also a story that has to do with the health risks that some of these mushers face and how those are overcome, at least from a racing perspective, on down the trail. You do have a little bit of a soundbite from Cindy, don't you?
Yes, I do, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a later episode. She has a degenerative eye disease, and that is manageable by medication, which she has to take frequently. But she is a very inspiring and amazing woman who has always been an adventurer, and she climbed Mount Everest, and then after climbing Mount Everest, she decided she wanted to run the Iditarod. So she's been training with Lance Mackey and is running his puppy team this year.
You know, speaking of puppy teams, you had mentioned a lot of folks move up to Alaska and catch that bug, whether they're Iditariders or some other way up here. But many, many mushers come up and start their mushing career as handlers for some of the big-name mushers. We're talking about the Genros and the Kings and the Boosters and all those folks. There are several teams running this year who have gained experience from these experienced mushing kennels and gone on to either run that puppy team or ventured out on their own and started their own kennel and are now running the Iditarod with their own dogs.
Right, and for someone who wants to get into mushing and wants to run the Iditarod, that can be a very good way to do it because you don't have the expense of putting your own kennel together, at least not initially. You get to spend a year or two working with someone who has an established kennel, and this is usually in the case of very established mushers who have very, very large kennels, and then when they need someone to run their puppy team, often they turn to their longtime handlers.
That's exactly right. Alex, we have about 10 minutes left, and I want to get into the groove as we normally do here on our show and focus on one particular musher. I know we talked about Charlie and Cindy just a little bit, but we want to focus every show. This is something we do on every broadcast throughout our coverage, is talk about one person in particular. Who are we talking about today? Do you have anybody on tap?
You know, I the person that I wanted to talk about today was Rudy Demoski, who is running the Iditarod this year, ran six races in the 70s and early 80s, including the second Iditarod in 1974. He has not run the race for 27 years, but decided that he wanted to get back into running the race and is running it this year. The Iditarod is an event that doesn't necessarily hurt someone to be older. Unlike a lot of sports where the older someone is, the more the less competitive they are. There are regularly people who are in their 50s and 60s and sometimes even their 70s who can be competitive racers or at least can be solid middle-of-the-pack finishers. And Rudy he grew up in Anvik, and he started mushing in 1974 after seeing the first Iditarod and was very inspired by that first race, which at the time was very different from the modern, what we think of as the modern Iditarod, in that it took, I believe, 19 days for the first finisher to come in, for the winner to come in. And the Red Lantern that year, I believe, was close to a month.
Wow.
It was a different kind of race as well, because in the modern era, we have trail breakers on snow machines who go out ahead, and they make the trail as hospitable as they can. Back then, the mushers were taking turns breaking the trail themselves. Often when there was a lot of snow, they would have to go ahead on snowshoes in order to break trail. And at least the first couple of years, it was less of strictly a competition and more of kind of a big camping trip. So he said that he started thinking about racing again 4 or 5 years ago, and some of his friends who were younger started putting teams together, and so he got some sponsorship and got a kennel together and is running the race this year at age 67 for the first time since 1985.
Wow, that's a pretty cool story. And, you know, one thing I want to add to that, Alex, is once a person has finished the Iditarod and he's considered a veteran, it doesn't matter anymore. He can run that race 20 or 30 years later and still be a veteran. He doesn't have to qualify again. He can just, you know, put in his application and his entry fee and be ready to go, whereas they make it very difficult, and rightly so, for rookies. They have to do several qualifying runs. They have to have sponsors, veterinary sponsors, as well as Iditarod musher sponsors. So it is definitely a race geared toward experience. They want that experience on the trail, because whether you realize it or not, you're out there in the middle of nowhere, literally alone, for dang near 1,000 miles.
Right, and people who just watch the ceremonial start in Anchorage might not realize that for vast portions of the trail, you do not see anybody. You maybe see other mushers who pass you or whom you pass, but there are long, long stretches where you won't see a single person. And a lot of once you get further and further into the race, a lot of the villages that the race passes through are very, very small. You know, villages where there are a couple of dozen or a couple of hundred people who live there, and in between the villages, you might not see anybody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you mentioned the folks that live in some of these villages. On the southern route, there are many of the checkpoints that have populations of zero. I know you had mentioned the ghost town of Iditarod, where the race gets its name. Nobody lives there right now. Some of these villages come to life because of the Iditarod. They open up shop, so to speak, for a week to 10 days, and otherwise nobody lives there at all.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention briefly that Martin Boozer, who's a four-time Iditarod champion, last year both he and his son Roan ran the race, and for a good part of it ran together. Roan withdrew a while ago, and so Martin basically had the choice of all of his best dogs and all of the best dogs that Roan would have taken. So a lot of people are thinking that Martin might have a very, very good chance this year, perhaps a better chance than he's had in the past 10 years.
Exactly, and he's a four-time champion of the Iditarod. We're looking for that fifth champion. Do we have any five-time champions? Is Rick Swenson a five-time champion?
Rick Swenson is the only five-time champion, and he's not running this year.
Right.
We're looking. Boozer could win his fifth, or Mackie, or Jeff King. Apparently, Jeff King, after having taken a little bit of time off, is back, and from what I've heard, is very, very determined this year. He's a very, like Lance Mackey, Jeff King is someone who is a very, very keen strategist. So he is not someone that you would want to write off.
That's exactly right. Alex, we have about 3 minutes left. I want to talk about what happens tonight and then what's happening tomorrow. We will be broadcasting again 6 p.m. Alaska time right here on Mushing Radio. But tonight, what it typically happens, and I'd like to get your take on it as well, typically most of these mushers, they're settling down in local hotels, doing their last-minute preparations, picking the last dogs for their team. They can have a pool of 20, I believe, that they can choose from at the start. When I say choose from, they can have a vet check of up to 20 dogs, and they have to get that down to 16. Is that correct, Alex?
Exactly. And almost every team will start with 16 dogs. There are occasionally some teams that will only start with 15 or 14, but pretty much every team that goes out is going to have 16 dogs tomorrow.
Right. So tonight, as I mentioned, most of the mushers are settling down, having dinner with family and friends and supporters. Often the Iditarider will spend time with these folks tonight in prep up for tomorrow when everything means business. Of course, some of them like to cut loose that one last time and go to parties and get-togethers and that sort of thing. But many of mushers are settling down for that last night with family and friends before they take off on this week to 10-day to sometimes 2-week journey on the trail totally alone.
Yeah, and they are often trying to get their last hot shower that they'll have for a while, their last meal of whatever food it is that's their favorite. The ones who live in Wasilla or up by Willow generally will go up there, and then they don't have as far to drive in the morning. A lot of them are, as you said, hunkered down in hotels in and around Anchorage. It used to be, when the race went out to Eagle River, that there was a big chili dinner at the checkpoint at the VFW hall. But since they changed and only run to Campbell Airstrip, they don't do that anymore. So, as you said, it's very much a chance to do all of their last-minute checking, make sure that they have all the required equipment, that they have everything they think that they're going to need, maybe review some strategy at the last minute, and then hopefully get a good night's sleep before they have to get up tomorrow and the real race starts.
And you said a good night's sleep. For many mushers, in particular the front of the pack guys, the Kings, the Boosters, all the top guys, this will be the last time that they sleep, sometimes for three and a half days. They won't sleep again other than, a cat nap here or there. They won't sleep again till Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right, because although the dogs get rest, on the run-rest cycle that we'll talk a lot more about as the race progresses, the mushers, when they get the dogs to either a checkpoint or to a place on the trail where they're going to camp, they have to feed the dogs. They have to take care of the dogs. They have to inspect the dogs. They have to change booties. They have to then do all of the things that they need to do to prepare for their next part of the race. So while the dogs might have a couple of hours to relax or to sleep, the mushers have all of this work that they have to do. And don't forget that once they leave the starting line at Willow, it's all the mushers. They can't get any outside help. They have to do everything themselves to take care of the dogs and to take care of themselves and their sleds.
That's exactly right. So just to talk real quickly, we are recording right now, so folks that listen to us later can hear this as the podcast. One important thing that happens tomorrow, it is for real at 2 o'clock Alaska time. It is for real. You're going to see an entirely different atmosphere than you saw downtown today. Today was all about celebration and fanfare. Tomorrow it's serious. It's down to business. They're running in it for not only the championship and the money and the prestige and everything that comes along with it, but they're running a race starting at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And I know, Alex, starting tomorrow, we're going to start talking about positions and things like that, who's going where, who's having good runs and bad runs. And, of course, we'll talk a lot about the checkpoints, starting with Yetna Station and Squintna and Finger Lake. You'll see a lot of mushers coming into those first three checkpoints within the first 24 hours of the race. So we'll get into some of that checkpoint strategy and that sort of thing as we progress starting tomorrow. Anything you want to end with, Alex, before we go?
You know, I just wanted to put one last plug in for Mush the Movie, which is showing again tonight on PBS Alaska at 10 o'clock. Two of the main mushers who are interviewed in the movie, Karin Hendrickson and Mike Supernaut, are running the Iditarod this year. So I'm wishing them a fantastic race and all of the best. And, you know, tomorrow it all starts for real. Today, as you said, was a bit of a carnival, a party, a celebration. Tomorrow it becomes very serious. And also for the fans and for people observing and watching the race, very, very fun. So I'm looking forward to it. It's a fantastic field. There's a lot of great up-and-coming younger racers, a lot of dog drivers who are just starting to come into their own, the younger generation, and that's very exciting. And I think there's going to be a lot of drama in this year's race.
Well, we're looking forward to it. That's why we're here on Mushing Radio. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, just about everywhere, mushingradio.com. I got links up to both my Twitter feed and for Alex's, and we'll make sure any information that we post there, we'll post on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else. Alex, I'll talk to you again tomorrow, okay?
It sounds good. By the way, Robert, I think it was great that you arranged to have them start the Iditarod on your birthday, so happy birthday.
Thank you very much. It's also musher Newton Marshall, the Jamaican musher's birthday as well. There's a Facebook picture of him standing by a birthday cake in the Jamaican flag motif. Very cool.
Excellent.
All right, Alex, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good day. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Thanks.